Australia and New Zealand have broadly been positioned in exactly the same place on these issues consistently.
One of those issues down under deals with relations with China. This is Wednesday, the 2nd of June, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, New Zealand battles rising floodwaters, rising COVID cases costing Malaysia in many ways, technology to make transportation easier for people with disabilities, surprise and sympathy about Naomi Osaka withdrawing from the French Open. Spam is and has been something other than a computer problem. It is all on today's VOA Asia. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has insisted relations with close ally Australia are not going to be negatively impacted by China. The Ardern government has been accused of going soft on Beijing in order to profit from better trade relations with the East Asian nation. Ardern has also been holding annual talks with Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison to discuss trade, security, and the challenges linked to the COVID-19 pandemic. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In the New Zealand skiing and adventure sports resort of Queenstown, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern and her Australian counterpart Scott Morrison have downplayed signs of division over relations with China. Earlier this year, New Zealand said it was uncomfortable using the 70-year-old Five Eyes intelligence grouping, which includes the United States, Britain, Australia, and Canada, to criticise China. That was widely interpreted as an attempt by Wellington to avoid damaging its lucrative trading relationship with Beijing. A television news documentary accused New Zealand of abandoning Australia for a fast Chinese buck. New Zealand was reluctant to sign joint statements from its alliance partners, condemning China's crackdown on the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong and its treatment of its minority Uyghur Muslim population. The declarations have angered China's government. But after annual talks Monday with the Australian Prime Minister, Ardern said she stood in solidarity with her trans-Tasman neighbour.
No point in our discussions today did I detect any difference in our relative positions on the importance of maintaining a very strong and principled perspective on issues around trade, on issues around human rights. And you'll see that Australia and New Zealand have broadly been positioned in exactly the same place on these issues consistently. So I really push back on any suggestion that we are not taking a strong stance on these incredibly important issues.
New Zealand has also indicated it will support Australia in its ongoing trade dispute with China. Tensions between Canberra and Beijing have increased in recent years over geopolitical disputes and allegations of Chinese interference in Australian politics. Canberra's call for a global investigation into the origins of the coronavirus, which first emerged in China in late 2019, sent the relationship into a tailspin, resulting in sweeping Chinese tariffs on many Australian exports, including wine, barley, and coal. Morrison said his country's relationship with New Zealand remained strong.
As great partners, friends, allies, indeed family, there will be those far from here who would seek to divide us, and they will not succeed.
There are, however, areas of disagreement. Canberra's controversial deportation of New Zealanders convicted of crimes, including children, has strained the two countries' relationship. A senior Australian minister compared the policy to taking the trash out. In response, New Zealand officials said the practice was deplorable and that the minister's inflammatory remarks served only to trash his reputation. Both countries also discussed how to ease tough COVID-19 border controls to eventually reconnect with the rest of the world. In a joint statement, Ardern and Morrison urged China to respect human rights in Hong Kong and criticised its incarceration of Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang. In response, China said that Australian and New Zealand leaders had made irresponsible remarks on its internal affairs and made groundless accusations against Beijing. China has been a subject of global condemnation over the treatment of a million Muslim Uyghurs held in internment camps, including a US classification of Chinese policies towards Uyghurs as genocide. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We invite you to read more on our top story. Follow our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. China reports a human case of H1N3 bird flu, a possible first. Chinese blogger failed for casting doubt on China-Indian border clash. North Korea ruling party reportedly creates new leadership post under Kim Jong-un. U.S. concerned at Chinese military presence in Cambodia urges balanced foreign policy. Pakistani TV talk show host taken off air allegedly for criticizing military. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern warned on Tuesday that crews face a big challenge cleaning up after heavy rain caused extensive flooding in sections of the country. 3 days of heavy rain flooded roads, homes, and fields, also forcing the closure of a major bridge in the town of Ashburton.
We've just had an opportunity to get a better look at some of the extensive damage as a result of really what is a 1-in-100-year flood. Extensive flooding in farmland areas, obviously damage to transport links. The number one priority at the moment is reinstating those transport links, with the bridge just south of Ashburton out of action. Work is underway as we speak to try and reinstate some of those alternative routes. At the moment, we're being advised that those should be reinstated by the end of today, but extensive work does need to happen in order for that to be successful.
On Monday, several hundred people in New Zealand were evacuated from their homes. Some were rescued by helicopter. Happening now in Asia, a court in Thailand Tuesday approved bail for three leaders of anti-government protest who had been remanded on charges of insulting that country's powerful king. The lawyer said the three were given bail on conditions that include they refrain from defaming the monarchy and inciting unrest. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for spending time with us here on VOA Asia. Malaysian Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin on Monday announced an additional $9.70 billion stimulus package ahead of the imposition of stricter lockdown measures this week to curb the rapid spread of COVID-19. Gloria Tso reports.
Malaysia's beginning a strict two-week lockdown starting on Tuesday, and the country saw panic buying at supermarkets ahead of its start, as the daily COVID-19 cases per capita there soar past India's. Malaysian Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin announced a $9.7 billion emergency aid package the day before, aiming to boost healthcare capacity and give moratoriums on loans, grants for small businesses, and subsidies for salaries. Malaysia's economy was on the path to recovery in the first quarter, then infections began to spike. Major automakers like Toyota and Honda announced Tuesday they would temporarily halt production in Malaysia due to the new lockdown, which will only allow essential manufacturing and the service sector to continue operations. The country has tried to step up its vaccination campaign, but fewer than 6% of Malaysians have received at least one vaccine dose, barely half the proportion in India. Malaysia's COVID-19 surge reflects an alarming trend across Southeast Asia, where countries are struggling to combat a rise in cases and vaccination rollouts are slow. Countries like Thailand and Vietnam had won praise for containing earlier waves of the virus. However, Thailand has seen its COVID-19 death toll rise tenfold over the past 2 months, while Vietnamese officials detected a more contagious combination of the British and Indian variants over the weekend.
Gloria Tso reporting. The Foreign Ministry of Malaysia Tuesday said it would summon China's envoy to explain what they call an intrusion by 16 Air Force planes into its airspace after the Southeast Asian country's military detected suspicious activity over the South China Sea. Malaysia's Air Force said it scrambled jets on Monday to conduct visual confirmation after the planes flew within 60 nautical miles off Sarawak State of Malaysian Borneo. It described the incident as a serious threat to national sovereignty and flight safety. The Chinese planes did not contact regional air traffic control despite being instructed several times, according to the Air Force. China's embassy earlier said the planes conducted routine flight training and strictly abided by international law without violating airspace of other countries. You can read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. American tire manufacturer Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company is facing accusations of unpaid wages, unlawful overtime, and threats to foreign workers at its Malaysian factory, according to court documents and complaints filed by workers. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. Cities around the world are installing new technology that connects to the personal devices of pedestrians, drivers, and riders on public transportation. Some cities are using these systems to make transportation easier for people with disabilities, such as those who are blind. For VOA, Jason Strother has the story from Busan, South Korea.
Park Hyung-bae doesn't leave home much without help from his mother or other guide. The 32-year-old says navigating Busan's public transportation system is not comfortable for someone who is blind.
When I've traveled alone without my family or someone to guide me, I've gotten lost and asked people where I am, but sometimes they ignore me. I have no idea if they've walked away or not. It makes me feel isolated. It's hard to ask for help.
But new smart technology inside this metro station aims to help people with visual impairments travel more independently. Park is trying out a smartphone app called Dagachi Naranhi, or Side by Side. It uses a GPS system to locate users and provides meter-by-meter directions to station amenities. Park uses his phone's text-to-speech software to listen to the directions. It tells him to walk straight for 98 meters. He arrives at one of two accessible information kiosks that are connected to Bluetooth beacons placed all around the station. The system speaks out loud and has a braille touchpad that turns into a tactile map of the facility.
When I select a destination, the braille display lets me feel the layout of the station and I can memorize where I need to go.
City officials say they plan to expand the app's coverage and install kiosks in all of the metro's 114 stations. The Busan Transportation Corporation's Jun Byung-jun says these accessibility features will benefit all commuters.
It's not just for people with disabilities. It can be convenient for pregnant women and the elderly. It has multiple languages, so even foreign visitors can use it. It's for everyone.
Smart technology could benefit everyone if it's made with universal design. That's according to the Seoul-based firm Dot, which partnered with Busan and created the accessible kiosk. Dot's Go Mi-suk says one way to do this is to bring in more designers who are blind.
From my perspective as a person with a visual disability, there's a difference in how people without a disability think about making products that can be used by someone who is blind. So it's important that visually impaired people be part of the planning and design process.
Back at the Busan Metro Station, Park Hyung-bae says inclusive tech does not just improve mobility.
Non-disabled people don't often see people with a disability using the subway. If the technology makes it easier for us to use public transportation, I think the overall perception of people with disabilities will improve.
And that, he adds, brings down social barriers. Jason Strother for VOA News, Busan, South Korea.
Making headlines in Asia, the World Health Organization on Tuesday approved the Sinovac COVID-19 vaccine for emergency use, the second Chinese vaccine to receive the WHO's green light. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Japanese Foreign Minister Toshimitsu Montegi greeted U.S. Navy Admiral John Aquilino in Tokyo Tuesday after Aquilino's recent promotion to the head of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command. Motegi welcomed the change in leadership and said he was keen to further enhance the deterrence and response capabilities of the alliance between the U.S. and Japan at a time when its importance was greater than ever. Aquilino said he wanted to continue cooperation between the U.S. and Japan and ensure a free and open Indo-Pacific.
I look forward to the continued cooperation of our nation and yours to continue to work to keep the peace and stability and ensure a free and open Indo-Pacific.
It was Aquilino's first foreign visit since assuming the position of commander of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command at the end of April. Comments came as Japan looks to bolster its military capabilities amid a deepening territorial row with China in regional seas. Japanese people in Tokyo said they were surprised and sympathetic about Naomi Osaka withdrawing from the French Open in a fight over post-match media duties, saying she had been suffering from depression and anxiety. Libby Hogan reports.
Japanese people in Tokyo said they were surprised and sympathetic in the wake of Naomi Osaka's withdrawal from the French Open. Her decision to pull out came a day after she was fined $15,000 for not holding a press conference after winning her first round match. Officials also threatened to expel her from the French Open and future majors if she continued to refuse to attend news conferences after her matches. But on the streets of Tokyo, people supported Osaka's decision.
I was surprised. There's the coronavirus now as well. So I think she's going through a lot mentally.
While others were sympathetic of her health.
I think she's under a lot of pressure, more than we can imagine. She got to the top when she was young, so I think we can't really imagine what she's going through.
Japan Tennis Association wished her the earliest possible recovery. The Williams sisters, Serena and Venus, chimed in with messages of support. And there were also other posts from athletes, including NBA's Steph Curry, who posted on social media, quote, "So damn impressive taking the high road when the powers that be don't protect their own." Meanwhile, there was some criticism of the organizers of the tournament. French Tennis Federation President Gilles Morton read a prepared statement on Monday, offering Osaka their support, but the irony of him not taking questions afterwards was not lost on some.
That was Reuters reporter Libby Hogan. Australia's softball squad arrived in Tokyo for a pre-Olympic camp on Tuesday, the first national team to come to Japan for training since the games were postponed. Brian Wood has more.
First national Olympics team to arrive in Japan since the games were postponed touched down on Tuesday. Australia's softball squad waved to the media before making their way to a nearly two-month training camp in central Japan. Everyone on their team and their coaching staff has been vaccinated, and officials say they'll be required to take a COVID-19 test every day of their stay. Before they left home, Australia's Olympic team leader, Ian Chesterman, said the squad was comfortable with Japan's protocols to protect them and locals.
And I think that these athletes as well know that they have to take great responsibility for their own behaviour as well. They're committed to do that. They're committed to not only look after themselves, but do the right thing by the Japanese population as well, and be ready for the games.
Meanwhile, Japan is battling a fourth wave of infections, with 10 regions, including Tokyo, under a state of emergency until near the end of this month. The country's vaccination rollout has also been slow, with only about 3% of the population fully vaccinated. Japan's Olympic teams will receive their jabs this week, while a top government spokesman said vaccinations at workplaces and universities will roll out near the end of this month. In a recent poll published by local media, a majority of Japanese people surveyed were against holding the games as planned. As for Australia's softball team, they're scheduled to play their opening game on July 21st against the host country, Japan.
Brian Wood reporting. Before spam became a computer term, it was an American luncheon meat that was exported and embraced by cultures around the world, especially Asians. Spam is sold in more than 40 countries worldwide, and immigrants in the United States are serving it, but with a twist. VOA's Elizabeth Lee went on a spam culinary tour in Los Angeles.
In almost every Asian pantry, you'll find a can of spam. This cooked pork product in a can has become one of America's most notable exports, especially to Asia, where pork is the centerpiece of many regional cuisines.
I thought spam is Korean-made product when I was very young.
Spam's largest market outside of the U.S. is Korea, where it was a staple in Timothy Hong's lunchbox as a child. Now he makes the Korean dish army stew at home in Los Angeles. He recalls how his grandfather brought spam to his family during the Korean War.
He used to work with the United States Army, and he got some, you know, lots of spam.
The global impact of this luncheon meat started during the Second World War, when the U.S. shipped more than 45 million kilograms of spam abroad to feed Allied troops.
It was, you know, vacuum sealed in that can. That's how it expanded around the world to our Allied forces, the American GIs, who then shared it with the local communities.
Since then, cultures worldwide, especially those in Asia, have embraced spam and made it their own. More than 80 years after its creation, spam's popularity is still growing.
2020 was the sixth consecutive year where spam saw record sales in the U.S., and immigrants from Asia and the Pacific Islands are helping with the popularity of spam in the U.S. market.
This Hawaiian cafe in Los Angeles started with two spam dishes, but customers kept asking for more. Now owner Paul Waba has 14 different ways of cooking spam.
We started up by just going to a local store, just giving me like 5 cans a week. Now I get growing and growing to the point where I can't fit them in my car no more, so I go through 100 cases a month of spam.
That's 2,400 cans of spam. Customers can even find spam burritos and tacos.
So we get a lot of Hispanic people here who likes that.
In Cambodia Town near Los Angeles, Teddy Deep created a popular protein-packed, non-traditional Vietnamese sandwich with eggs and spam.
Nobody like incorporated like pickled carrot and daikon in the spam. The sweetness and the saltiness combine together to make a different taste.
As foodies' palates evolve, so has luncheon meat. Hormel Foods now has 11 varieties of spam. The company Omni Foods created a plant-based luncheon meat called Omni Pork, served at Chef John Liu's Los Angeles-based Chinese-Peruvian restaurant, Chifa.
It's already pre-cut, and you cook it. It has to stay frozen. But other than that, the taste is very comparable.
Liu's and his wife's parents from Taiwan and Hong Kong introduced them to spam.
Other parts of my family are vegan, so clearly now they get to enjoy this, where they before they were not eating meats.
Spam and other luncheon meat brands will continue to evolve as immigrants from Asia and the Pacific Islands try new and creative ways of cooking spam and reintroducing it to the U.S. with its salad bowl of immigrant cultures. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Amy Heibels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please be careful and enjoy the day ahead.